Hello and welcome to another episode of Macro Minutes from Money Control, where we discuss everything on India's governance and policies. In this special episode, Money Control's Arup Roy Chaudhary and Kamalika Ghosh speak to Professor Shamika Ravi, Senior Fellow at Brookings Institution and former member to the Economic Advisory Council to the Prime Minister. Shamika Ravi talks about the expected winter surge in COVID cases, how the state and centre should manage the economy and the health infrastructure, how the pandemic and economic slowdown have impacted centre-state relations, and whether India can afford another nationwide lockdown.
Dr. Shamika Ravi, thank you very much for having me to speak with Money Control. Now, since the beginning of the pandemic, you have been tracking daily cases, you have been tracking fatality rates, and you have spoken publicly about how when we saw the trend coming down and again that has stopped, now again cases are rising. So right now, in the first week of November, how bad is the winter wave going to be based on the numbers that you have seen? We are already at 8.4 million total confirmed cases with 5.2 lakh active ones. So where do you see, how bad do you think the winter surge is going to be? And where are we now?
So thank you, Arup. Thank you for the invitation. Well, there is no obvious reason to believe that India is exceptional. Mm. So we should be prepared for a second surge of the type that the world is witnessing in Europe, as South Korea, Japan have witnessed. The US is on to its third big wave. So waves have become a reality, at least as far as democratic countries are concerned, from where we are getting regular data. So, keeping China and the Chinese numbers aside, we do know that a surge is possible. The current situation is such that since the middle of September, our daily counts have been falling, and as have the death rate. It has seen a steady decline. However, over the last 1 week, and it's important to look at data minutely because these trends, you know, we have to prepare at least at local levels. According to the trends of those specific locations, over the last 7 days, we are seeing that the decline has stopped. So the decline in the daily cases that we were seeing for the last 45 days have now stopped, and we have stabilized around 45,000 new cases a day, approximately. Our daily deaths had fallen all the way to approximately 500 deaths a day. That also in the last 1 week has surged to about 600 deaths a day. So clearly now we are seeing that the decline has stopped and there is a potential reversal that we are facing. The reason I mention local level is because first, health is a state subject. We do have national level policy, beginning with the speeches of the Prime Minister, a national lockdown, etc. But the reality of an experience of an average citizen vis-a-vis COVID is dependent on the administrative health capacity at the local block or district level. So Delhi, where we are sitting today, is currently witnessing a third wave. A third wave where we are seeing more than 6,000 cases a day. I do believe that the Delhi government is prepared for up to 10,000 cases a day. At least this is what I have gauged from the speeches and the numbers put out. Is it sufficient in terms of the hospital beds that we have, or do we need to prepare more? So I think we are at that juncture now where cities in particular, Delhi, Mumbai, Bangalore is a very big hotspot today. There are several other cities, Ahmedabad. In fact, Punjab as a state is the only state we have seen where the case fatality rate has only increased with time. So what we look at an all India level can be quite misleading or simplistic, because policy implementation or intervention must be at a local level.
In fact, it's interesting because your recent tweet was about Delhi, the situation in Delhi and the fatality rates in Delhi. And you made a very interesting point. You said that, you know, to get that optimum health infrastructure in place, the private sector also needs to put in some effort. And you said that the private hospitals are not doing their bit. Could you explain that? Is this something that you've seen based on the numbers, based on trends and the data that you've seen? Is there something you've seen across the country that the private sector perhaps needs to do its bit, the private hospitals need to do their bit to back up the public health infrastructure?
Well, that is a very big question right now, Arup, because 75% of India's healthcare infrastructure is urban, and close to 70% OPD, consultation, is exclusively private.
Okay.
So India has a very large and dominant private healthcare sector. Indians on an average are dependent on private healthcare for their needs. So that's one reality we must acknowledge. The second reality is that this is an infectious disease, right? Which means that the cost for these kind of infectious disease management has lots of externalities involved. So private sectors under any circumstance tend to stay away from these kind of diseases, which is why dependence on public care is that much more. That is the reality of the disease or the infection, which is where you see that TB is largely dealt with, not just at a policy, but also day-to-day implementation through government hospitals. Right? Private hospitals tend to minimize their exposure to infectious diseases. That is the economics of these diseases. What we have seen over the last several months is that the relationship between several states, governments, and the industry has only become more tenuous. Now, of course, everybody is under pressure, but there is a large underutilized capacity in the private sector, which has to be mobilized if we are to meet the surge in the demand. Now, it is not as simple as saying who is at fault, because we are here today on account of a breakdown in a certain relationship, matter of trust. And I think the courts have also added to the chaos by, if you remember in the beginning of the pandemic, when we were talking of testing, the courts mandated that all testing must be free. Now that just defies all economic logic, because we are at the point when we want more and more testing. In fact, we want to make testing easily available, affordable, and accessible to all. That has been the attempt. Similar attempt has to be made in terms of access to beds. And without private sector being party to this, we will always find ourselves with a capacity constraint where the fear is that the death rates will surge. And that is our main objective. We have to minimize deaths due to COVID.
All right. Since you have closely worked and you have closely tracked this pandemic in India, you have worked at the intersection of public health and the economy. So perhaps, ma'am, you are the best person to ask this question. Can India afford another nationwide lockdown?
No. A very categorical no. But at the same time, it is important to understand why we needed a national lockdown in the beginning. You see, the only pragmatic response that a country like India could have, and this is hindsight, and hindsight is often perfect, but regardless of the politics and the international sort of narrative and politicking around it, a country with limited health infrastructure that we face, we could not afford to not go into a lockdown and stem the increase in this infection. So this outbreak had to be contained, and the best containment policy is lockdown. In fact, we have analyzed over 14 countries, mainly European and the US, some Latin American. Every country has shown a decline in the spread of the infection on account of a lockdown. We have also compared these with countries such as Sweden, which did not go into a lockdown, and then tried to figure out what is the relative advantage of one strategy versus the other. In the Indian case, it's a very clear result that the lockdown has slowed the spread of the virus. Now, why do I say that it was an absolutely essential step at that point? Because we needed to buy time. Time to ramp up testing, which is the first step. Time to set up many, many quarantine facilities, fever clinics or extra beds, and then of course the hospital infrastructure in terms of not just beds but oxygens. Now remember, in the beginning the science was not clear, so we thought we needed to enhance our ventilator facilities and the ICU facilities. Thankfully, over time it has become amply clear that what we need is oxygen support. It is far better an intervention, but all of that required us to give us more time. Now remember, of course, when we think of a problem like this, we are thinking Delhi, Mumbai, Cochin, Bangalore, Hyderabad. But think of Nagaland. Nagaland did not have one testing facility. Today, they have two ICMR approved. There are many such parts of the country where a lockdown of the nature that we have has led to enhancement of public health facilities from testing to treatment. Right? So that was necessary. But what is now equally clear is that a national strategy is not going to of a lockdown is not going to be the solution moving forward. Because India is a very large country, you need localized solutions. If there is a surge in Delhi beyond our capacity, we need a lockdown in Delhi. Perhaps not even all of Delhi. We need it for certain areas. So this is where the resident welfare associations have to be mobilized. We have to look at certain blocks. So we need now precision policy making vis-a-vis containment strategies, which I think definitely not at the national level, but also perhaps not at state level. We need now district level, city level, municipality level interventions.
The government has been talking about green shoots since the July-September quarter and now even in the October-December quarter, whatever we have seen so far. However, the Reserve Bank of India has publicly warned that there are huge downside risks to these green shoots that the government is pointing at. For whatever reason, be it Penta festival demand, be it just a dead cat bounce as it's being. When you start from a low base, every activity is good activity, right? But do you think that the case for green shoots have been overstated, or are there really, is there really a resilience to the Indian economy and to the society at large that we are actually seeing some good indicators in the economy, which shows that, you know, there's a recovery which is happening, quite a big recovery which is happening?
You know, independent of the government's efforts, there are some of us who have been looking at high frequency data. The high frequency data have been of very many different kinds. The one I particularly like and I trust is the Google mobility data. Because people are very highly connected, and Google has data on mobility of people. If you have a gadget, which now everybody does in the form of a phone, if you move, and also we know, we have demarcated residential areas, commercial areas, so we know where people are moving from and where to. So now we are able to, at city levels and at state levels, look at what is happening to people's economic activity in terms of movement. Now, if we look at the Google mobility data for all India level, it shows very clearly, and these are now consistency tests that we do, that when the lockdown was announced, there was an immediate decline across every state of the country of close to 80%. So basically, we're saying the Indian economy was brought to a complete halt. But after the initial lockdown was announced, it was only towards the end of the first lockdown that you actually saw the decline go all the way down to 85%. Because by then we had all understood what the magnitude of this was. And also remember, lockdown had to be enforced also. People had to be prepared. People wanted to reach their nearest sort of stable point. Now, after that, from first week of May, when lockdown 2 started, the Google mobility data, and this is why we trust it, is beginning to show increase. So as we started relaxing different components of the lockdown, whether it was essential services or whether subsequently many more services got involved, you are seeing that across every state of the country the pickup has started. Of course, the point to warn and caution is that even today we are close to minus 25% of our pre-COVID time in terms of movement of people in the retail and recreation etc. space. So we are still under. We have not yet gone back to our pre-COVID times. But one thing to note is the cross-state variation. States where you have more infection are much slower to recover. So Maharashtra, Karnataka, Kerala, these are some of the slowest recovery states.
What about Delhi?
Well, Delhi is better than Maharashtra, but still much worse than UP, Bihar, Uttarakhand. Uttarakhand is doing remarkably well.
I think Delhi is an anomaly. Delhi has shot up much faster in terms of activity, in terms of mobility or activity. Is that true?
Well, we don't know. Again, going by Google mobility, Delhi is far more active than Bangalore or Bombay. And that could be on account of the fact that we did see peaking and reduction in deaths. And while Maharashtra and Bangalore continued to surge, we had by then seen a steady decline. So I think that goes to also give certain comfort, and people then begin to go back to shopping, to moving around, meeting, professional activities, etc. So I think if you just go by a data like that, of course, you have to also reinforce it. If you look at demand for cement, electricity, these are all different aspects of the economy which seem to suggest that pickup is happening. We are nowhere close to the pre-COVID time yet, but the pickup is quite robust.
So even before the COVID outbreak happened, there the collection, GST collection, had started becoming a little bit of a pain point. Now, once the road to recovery begins and once things fall in place, what would you say, what would be the ways in which, you know, revenue through GST or what would be the ways in which revenue could be augmented and, you know, the problem that we were seeing before COVID, that could be, you know, sorted? Like, what would be the way forward for GST?
I'll tell you, the pandemic has definitely brought the focus back into the way the fiscal federal structure is set up. Eventually, because the spending on the pandemic itself has been very different across different states, right? We have states such as Kerala, which has borrowed at above market rates, had a very strong anti-COVID response. Of course, we are in a situation where the numbers there are have only surged, and they have seen sort of a very large overall case count compared to states, for instance, like Telangana, or if you look at Odisha, Jharkhand, etc., where the spending hasn't been that high, but where the, you know, the case count has been sort of suppressed over time. I think, given the shock that COVID has provided to states, we are likely to see demand for restructuring the way the GST obligation, the central obligations, have been put forth until now. And I think it warrants a good discussion. It warrants a very good discussion because the responses to COVID have been highly decentralized. We have national level policies and ICMR protocols and guidelines, but eventually the impact of COVID on healthcare and the responses have been at the state level. And we cannot not consider that when we think of GST obligations. That is number one. I would also push this point a little more to say that, you know, one of the reasons why we saw such a prolonged first wave in India is that not all states played ball. While testing and isolation was ramped up early in many states, it was not done in a large strategically economic state like Maharashtra. So it is on account of Maharashtra, which for a large number of time was 1/4 of our overall case count, for them not to ramp up testing, to maintain test positivity rate of about 20%, highest in the country consistently for 5 months. You know, that also tells us that for a large federal country which is so interconnected, people move. We are not China. You can't have containment strategy where people are not allowed to move from one to another, because of which the rest of the country falls vulnerable to the state policies of specific states. And in this case, it was Maharashtra. A very large number of infections that went towards the eastern states, or Maharashtra then reporting 5 out of the top 10 hotspot districts in the country from Maharashtra, is on account of the fact that responses are local. Central government has limited powers and bandwidth within which you can manage the situation. So you see, it is not just our economy which is so closely linked, and therefore the GST outlays and the commitments have to respond to local demands, but in the health situation, which is obviously having a bearing on economic recovery overall, if Maharashtra is slow to recover, Indian economy is slow to recover. So I think GST Council has laid, it is a good blueprint, but we should not limit ourselves to only thinking of taxes and obligations of center to the states. I think this federal structure is one which should be adopted for sectors such as healthcare as well, because of the interdependence and the sensitivity. And this is a good time to push for some of
this
these.
Is something NK Singh has also spoken about. I don't know what he has said in his latest report, which he even submitted to the president, but he has spoken about this. So going ahead to the next calendar year, not fiscal year, the next calendar year, what is the one thing that the government needs to do? What is the one thing that the government needs to be careful about?
Well, it's important for the government to recognize that there is widespread fear. Fear which is driving the slowdown or the pickup being slow. And I think that is where the role of the government becomes paramount. Because in a situation such as where we are, the central role of the government is to manage expectations, which means give out information, have a strategy, communicate that strategy clearly. The best way to overcome fear in a country such as India, where our death rates are in fact thankfully very low, is to educate people about it and tell them that, look, even if there is a surge, we have brought case fatality under control. We have the necessary infrastructure. We have created the capacity. Your district has this testing center, has these many hospital beds. We have the required infrastructure. Don't panic. But maintain the basic protocols of distance and masks, etc. I think that information, until people have, risk aversion, fear will remain. So economic uptick or the recovery will remain slower than it ought to ideally be in a country like India. We are not Europe. We are not seeing those kind of deaths. So the fear must be contained. That's number one. Number two, from the economic management perspective, the role is manage expectation, which means the country now, the government realizes that this is where we are. This is how I'm going to spend my money. The government's fiscal commitment has to be well explained, well communicated, and frankly, well executed starting now. Because under fear, private sectors are not going to invest. Private consumption will not increase over and beyond some muted increase because of the festival season. So the role of the government becomes central. The government has to spend. What will it spend on? Where will it spend? In what timely fashion? And it must be seen to do this for it to be credible. I think that is the second role. The third, as far as the vaccine is concerned, I think hope springs eternal.
True.
And the fact is that we are the lab or the pharmacy to the world. We are the producers of vaccine. How much of that production we can afford ourselves is a question we must answer. So there are difficult questions, but we must have an answer to those questions which are being asked. More importantly, the strategy of the vaccination itself, the drive, that must be now seriously considered. That, for instance, several countries have said that the productive part of the population will get the vaccine first. Of course, frontline workers who are out there and more susceptible will get it first. So countries are going out and now making these kind of announcements. I think it is important for us to start the groundwork on this particular strategy of vaccine.
Thank you, Professor Shamika Ravi, for your valuable insights. With that, it's a wrap on this episode of Macro Minutes. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.